Hey, I'd like to welcome Danny Smith to the Protectors Podcast. I'm real excited about this interview. Danny has decades as a detective, policeman, deputy. Well, let me do that one again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Hey, I'd like to welcome Danny Smith to the Protectors Podcast. How's it going, Danny?
Good, Jason. How are you?
Real good. I just messed up my intro before, so I figured, hey, let's just go straight with Danny. Welcome to the podcast.
There you go.
So you have like a ton of experience as a lawman, from working the street to homicide. And, you know, I love talking to homicide detectives because I'm really, you know, outside of the military spectrum, the special ops spectrum books of fiction, I really love like a hard-boiled detective novel. So
yeah,
tell us about it, man.
Well, you know what? Hard boiled is exactly what my books are, and it's kind of interesting. You know, there's a lot of fiction out there, and there's a lot of mystery out there. But when you get to the hard boiled stuff, it seems like there's not a lot of people writing it that have lived the life, and that's what the feedback I get from my writers or from my readers. I'm sorry. Is that they really love the authenticity of it, you know, that I'm able to put in there. And what I mean by that is anyone can Google, you know, information on guns or even procedures or tactics for that matter. But to have that feel, you know, the emotion, the feelings, what it's like to you know, stand over another dead cop and to go to that funeral or to attend the autopsy. All of those things are things you can't learn by hiring a consultant. So I think it gives me a little bit of an edge in my fiction. And so far my series, the Dickie Floyd Detective Series, has done really well. I've got 5 books published in it now, and I'm working on the 6th.
That's a lot of work, man. A lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yeah.
It's like it's truly a second career. But let's backtrack to your career. That's, you know, sometimes lately I've been kind of glossing over like just how in depth some of my guests have in like their career. And I'm reading yours and I'm like, now I know where you get that experience, because homicide, I'm so intrigued by it. And if you kind of tell me how you got into that, that'd be awesome.
You know, I was with the LA County Sheriff's Department, and every department's set up differently. I traveled the country. When you work homicide, you travel a lot. It's almost amazing how much you end up chasing people all around the country and beyond. So I've worked with homicide guys all over the country. And it's always interesting talking to guys and finding out how their bureau or squad was situated and configured and how the on-call works. And ours was very different than anyone I'd ever talked to anywhere. And that is, we have one homicide bureau for the County of Los Angeles, and it's centrally located, and it's a big Costco sized office that houses about 80 investigators. And those 80 investigators are divided up into 6 teams. And then within those teams, you have partners. So you have, you know, 5 or 6 pairs of guys on every team. The point is, LA County is a huge, huge county, obviously, and has, you know, well, off the top of my head, I can't even remember now how many cities we police, but we would process, back when I was there, anywhere from 350 to 500 murders a year.
Wow.
Yeah. And the reason I mention that, because a lot of people, you know, they almost have a hard time wrapping their brain around those kinds of numbers. And I tell people, look, you know, I mean, you don't have to be very bright. I proved that by going there. But when you're working with that kind of experience surrounding you, I mean, I literally, you know, you could walk across the room and talk to a guy that had investigated 1,000 murders. He'd been, you know, working homicides for 15 years there. And you just can't get that experience when you work at a smaller agency, or if where you work, the homicide bureaus or squads are divided up and kind of separated out. We had all of that experience collected into one building. And I'm telling you, that was a great thing, because you learn from some guys that were just fantastic. So it was a lot of fun. It's a very, very hard job, and there's a ton of stress. Unfortunately, you know, our department, when you get to homicide, it's the big leagues, you know, to get there is a big deal. And so, you know, when, unfortunately, a lot of the people that end up going there are guys that have worked really hard to get there, you know, A-type personalities. And I might argue that that's probably the worst kind of person that could do that job, because, you know, I used to tell people I was like the Irish boxer. I just stand there and take every blow and, you know, show people how tough you are by taking a beating, where there's those guys that look like they've never broken a sweat. You know, the blows just glance off them and they keep going, and they do that job for many, many years. And that's a really cool thing. That wasn't me. And I only worked homicide for 7 years. I had 148 death cases that I investigated personally, and that was enough for me. I was glad that I left when I left, but I've got a lot of friends that have done three or four times that.
Yeah, but you know, you mentioned 7 years, and 7 years is a long time in law enforcement. And 148 bodies, that's humans, that's souls. So, I mean, I can't imagine the wear and tear that must have on you mentally, especially if you can't solve the case.
Yeah, and that was the tough part too. And I mean, you know, I had 14 years on the job when I got there. You have to have quite a few years of experience on the street, and then several more years of experience as a detective before you're going to get to a place like homicide. But yeah, when one of the frustrating parts about the job is those cases start stacking up, and when they all matter, and almost all of them do, you know, I'm not going to say they all do. I mean, you know, I'd be lying if I said that, but there's some cases where, you know, you got a guy that, you know, is a killer anyway, and he ends up dead, and you really don't care. You know, I mean, I'll just be honest about it. But the majority of cases really matter, and you're working them as hard as you can. And you're on call about every, you know, 10 to 12 days or so. And you catch another case, and it's sometimes hard to get back to those cases the further behind you they are. So you always hear everyone talking about that first 48 hours, and it's true. I mean, that first 2 to 3, 4 days are critical. And if you haven't really gotten a good grip on that case and kind of have good direction with it by then, there's a really good chance that it's going to just drop off, and pretty soon it's going to be cold.
Now, you know, I could see writing as a stress relief. Have you ever taken any of those cold cases, those ones you couldn't solve, and kind of wrapped them up into the Dickie Floyd series?
You know, I use a lot of my my experiences and cases, mine and other people's cases that I was privy to, as material. You know, I haven't used any particular case and just wrote a book about that. But I do use a lot of the material, and I fictionalize it. I use a lot of the characters. You know, people say, well, are all these people made up, or, you know, do you base them on some of the guys you worked with? And I tell people, yeah, a lot of them are a lot of the characters are based on people I've worked with. And the reason why is because you couldn't make up people more fascinating and interesting than the people that I've been worked with over the years. I mean, seriously, you know, it's just such a great, well, you know, you know, law enforcement draws some of the greatest people on earth,
uh-huh.
You know, kind of like our military does. I mean, it really does. It draws, you know, the best that America has to offer, people that are just really interesting and oftentimes very very fun and entertaining people. And and so those characters, you know, I mean, I sometimes I get hell because, you know, I'll take a guy that looks like or sounds like someone that we all knew, and that person go, "Hey man, you know, you got me in trouble with my wife. You know, you're saying that I was you know, single and running around and with this woman and that woman." And but anyway, it's all fictionalized, and it's I just do the best that I can to make sure that nobody is going to be an obvious that is definitely this person. So
yeah, I'm so intrigued by the writing process, and you know, doing it like now as me writing nonfiction, but I always have this fiction in the back of my head when I start writing. And as I talk to more and more authors, I visualize your writing process of thinking about these characters and the characters you worked with. And I see a lot of that when I'm writing now, like when I'm like outlining a fiction book, is like, man, it's true. Like you find these just unique people who you can never find in the real life, it seems, but you work with them. It's yeah. Fun, man.
Yeah. And you know, fiction is fun to write because you can do what you want to do. And I have a kind of this ongoing project that is a real slow back burner type thing that I don't give near enough attention to, but I do plan on writing some true crime, and based on a couple of my more interesting cases, and one of which is just, you know, a fabulous story, tragic, horribly tragic case, but it would make a really good commercial true crime book. And you know, Jason, it's just you work on that thing, and it's difficult because unlike fiction, I mean, everything, you've got to get it right. Every detail matters. Yes. Much yes. Like the case, when you're putting a case together, every detail matters. So it's not as much fun to write nonfiction, but I enjoy reading true crime and nonfiction, and I know a lot of my readers enjoy it as well. And so I think eventually I'll probably have a true crime book or two that they'll be on my shelf.
Well, you know, one thing is, like, I haven't read your books yet, but I promise I'm going to, because I go through books quickly just because I have a lot of authors on here and I want to give them the due diligence of giving like a fair review and everything. But the thing is, when you have someone who's been 7 years in homicide, 148 cases, there's a reality, like you were saying before, there's a reality that comes out on your paper that you just don't get if you're doing like a Google search for, you know, how you process a crime scene, how a gun works, you know.
Right.
It just doesn't work unless you have that experience and you're putting it on paper.
Right. Right. And, yeah. No, I write a blog also. It gives people a really good idea as to whether or not they want to read my books. But I write a blog. It's called The Murder Memo, and I write a lot of true crime there. And in fact, the blog I posted today, it was about a deputy sheriff who I knew when I was working on the streets as a detective. And right after I got to homicide, about a year later, he got killed in the line of duty. He was killed. Shot to death. And that was the first dead cop case that I was thrown into. And it was, it would have been shocking enough just to do that, but I actually attended the autopsy as well. And this is a guy that I had worked with and around and had interacted with. And man, I'll tell you what, that makes the wheels squeak a little bit right there.
I can't even imagine losing someone I work with like that, especially because it's a tight knit community. You know that. I know that. The audience knows that, and it really is a thin blue line. I don't think people, if you're not in the law enforcement community, realize that thin blue line is. It's just because there's a thin amount of people doing it, and then when you lose someone, then you have to investigate that crime. I just, you know, I can't imagine.
Yeah. Well, I've been to a lot of cop funerals, and when I had to go to the autopsy of a deputy sheriff that I knew, I walked out there that day and I decided that I was done with cop funerals unless it was a very close friend. I just said, no, I'm paying a high enough price with this. I can't take on any more burden. You know, if I'm going to go to the autopsy, I sure as hell am not going to the funeral, you know, and that may sound kind of shitty to some people, but
no,
man, it's a hell of a burden to carry. And, you know, just a cop's funeral. I mean, I've been to several of the, you know, cop funerals of people that I'd worked with, but you know, even if you didn't know the person, going to a cop funeral is a really, really heavy thing and a very emotional thing that's difficult on you and your family and everyone else. So I had to kind of decide, okay, well, I'm going to have to set part of this load that I carry. I'm going to have to set it down if I'm going to continue on this path.
Well, you know, a lot of law enforcement get into it for the right reason. And a lot of law enforcement are empaths. They just absorb so much emotion and you just can't deal with it. So it does become a, not really, you know, I don't know if burden is the right word for it. It becomes just draining and that, yeah, I don't know. It just, it could eventually kill you if you take too much on.
It will definitely kill you. Stress kills. I left the job a little bit early. I had a little over 21 years on the job and I got hurt, had to have two neck surgeries and I left. And I tell people it was truly a godsend because, you know, they can fix your neck. But when I left, I mean, my blood pressure was extremely high. I had a lot of things going on. It turns out that I had PTSD and I was pretty depressed. My wife had noticed it for about a year and I was in denial about it. But you know, years later, I mean, I'm healthier than I was when I left, even though I've got the aging process I'm fighting, you know, and people, you know, I mean, I remember the first time that, cause I moved to Idaho after I retired from the sheriff's department. And, I don't know, 5 years later or something, I think I was down there for a friend's funeral and I had colleagues saying, man, you look younger than you did when you left here. And it's true. You know, I was healthier. That stress, it kills, it takes a toll. And the one thing that I would highly recommend, and it's harder today, Jason, than it was when I was working there in the streets. You know, the things that guys are up against now is just unbelievable to me. You know, I watch the news and I want to lose my mind. And the only thing I can say is, man, you got to have an outlet and you got to keep mm-hmm. things in perspective. And you've got to, and you know, the peer counseling thing has come a long way over the years, but hell, when I first hired on back in the early 80s, guys never talked about things like PTSD or being depressed or not being okay with, seeing a person dead or whatever. Well, guess what? we've evolved and I think we're learning. Yeah. We got to be able to talk about that.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people don't realize that law enforcement suffers the same PTSD and the same stressors as soldiers in combat.
Yeah,
for long term, and that's one thing. You know, I have another show coming out soon that's going to be dealing about law enforcement stress and suicide, and having that grassroots to talk. And by grassroots, I mean, you know, you're not going to call a 1-800 number. You're going to go talk to one of your buddies or one of your friends or something, and be able to vent. Because you need that outlet. You need an outlet, whether it's a loved one or a friend.
Well, and I can tell you, it's how I started writing, to be honest with you. I mean, I had to write up this big, you know, basically a response to a questionnaire. And it was when I was diagnosed with PTSD. And the shrink told me, he says, hey, you got to write for a living, man. He goes, this is really good. And of course, I didn't really care what he was saying about that. I was more interested in, you know, how do I go forward from here? But then it came back around and I remembered his words and I thought about, you know, that I had always enjoyed writing. So I started writing and he was right. It was very therapeutic. And that was what he had told me. He said, you know, writing is very therapeutic and you gotta just write, you know, put your thoughts on paper. So I did that for a long time and I did a lot of it before I ever got to the point where anything I wrote was publishable, you know, for a number of reasons. I mean, it's a lot, as you know, it's a lot harder to write something that people actually want to read than it is to write a police report or whatever.
Yes. And you know, and that's one common thread between all the authors I've interviewed is, you know, taking your time and writing and writing and writing and then editing and editing and editing. And then, you know, sometimes it doesn't work and you have to like start from square one. But yeah, the love of the writing is kind of what keeps you going. And you kind of know if you're going to continue with it or you're just going to be a one book guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, for me, the addiction came in that people loved my first book and I started getting a lot of, you know, letters and messages and emails, whatever, asking for a sequel. And that's kind of how it started. It wasn't really the first book I'd written, but it was the first one I published. You know, they say you have to write a book to learn how to write a book. And I wrote a book that was, you know, thrown away. I mean, it's somewhere in a digital file, but it was pretty horrible. And, the writing, it's an addiction. And that's kind of why I enjoy the blog so much, is I don't have to sit and write a book to be able to write something and get it out there that
yes,
people enjoy. And sometimes it's true crime and it's fun and or sometimes it's true crime and it's serious. Other times it's lighthearted and it's funny. I wrote a thing, you know how you got so many blogs that want to tell you how to live your life, you know, like, mm-hmm, you know, it, you know, 10 ways to a better love life and, you know, 13 ways to, you know, having a cool beard like Jason's or whatever. Well, I get so tired of these self-help blogs that I wrote a parody and it's called eight ways to get away with murder.
And, oh, that's pretty cool.
Well, it turns out the damn thing is popular. I mean, it's like, and unfortunately, I mean, people that are finding it might be, you know, seriously Googling, hey, how do I get away with murder? You know, and they're finding my blog but it's kind of a humor. I mean, it is definitely a humorous little blog. And so that's all. I mean, it's fun to write and I enjoy it. Every once in a while, I'll write something cool about, you know, my daughters or my horses or something, you know, just to really kind of change the pace from crime. But yeah, if you've got writing in your blood, it's, you can't not write.
Well, that's the thing, you know, I'm glad you brought that up because if you're writing, you write. And that's, I write a lot of op-eds, but there's a lot of things that I want to do that aren't like, so like, they're not about the cartel. They're not about the border. So I find myself writing or doing videos about, like, you know, government hiring or something, like just things that I enjoy, like helping a vet get hired. And I'm kind of thinking about this blog thing. And I think that'd be great just to have something on an outlet on a side, even if nobody reads it, just that I could get some things out there, you know?
No, you should. And I'll tell you what, I mean, especially since you have a blog and you've got an audience, I mean, the bottom line is you could write a blog, even if it's only 2 or 3 paragraphs. You know, just kind of a summary of an interview that you did and say, hey, you know, go listen to this podcast and put a link on it. I mean, there's no reason you shouldn't. And then you're satisfying your desire to write. And I think you should do that.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one thing I love about this podcast is I actually get to talk to like interesting people. And
yeah, meanwhile, like yourself, though, you know, honestly, your listeners are sitting here glassing over going, Jesus Christ, guys, you know, take this off the stage. I mean,
no, but you know what? I've actually found that some people like a conversation, man. It's they want to know what the process is. They want to know. And that's the thing I find by like reading books. And I'm sure I'm going to get this the same way with your books. It's not just the reality of the book, the realism. It's you learn something. Every time I read a book, I'm learning something. Even if it's fiction, there's something like a new technique, a new something, a new nuance. And it's not just for me to write, but it's in real life. You know, being an LEO, still being an LEO, or having like a military interest, I always find something kind of cool in every book. And that's why I like the fact that you have that 20 years experience. You have the 7 years homicide. You have the cases. You have everything going for it. So I'm really looking forward to for you to send that signed copy of your book. Hint, hint.
Hey, I'll do it, man. I'll tell you though, I got to tell you this, what you're saying right now, I try to put something really cool in every one of my books because as a reader, like you, I enjoy that too. And one of the things, in my third book, Echo Killers, I and I, you know, I write, I'm a, what they call a pantser. I don't plot out. It just, the book takes on a life of its own, and I'm as surprised as you guys are when shit happens. But I ended up, I had a cop funeral, and rather than just kind of, you know, going over that, you know, okay, then there was this cop funeral, I actually did a behind the curtains, and even most cops that I knew, they would come to me and they'd say, man, I never thought about what goes into planning a police funeral.
Yeah.
I mean, you see it on the TV. It's a huge event. It's not something that just happens overnight. Well, there's actually in departments as large as LA County Sheriff's and LAPD, there's a unit, a group of people that's what they do. They plan funerals. That's their whole job.
Wow.
And I, in Echo Killers, I built a character that was part of this unit, or a couple characters. And I show that kind of behind the curtains, that part of it. And people found it really intriguing. Like, wow, I never would have imagined.
And, you know, I never would have imagined either. Cause you know, you think about, cause I went to a couple of California funerals when I was out there working, and it's a different community because there are so many LEOs within like a short distance of each other that when you have a funeral for like a CHP or another officer, there's going to be 1,000+ showing up.
Thousands and, yes, and sometimes hundreds of agencies.
Yes. From all over the country,
all over the country. Well, someone has to coordinate that.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have dignitaries that are going to be involved, and someone has to coordinate that. So there's a lot to it that, you know, you don't need to know how the sausage is made, right, to enjoy the meal. But for whatever reason, you know, sometimes you'll see someone to show you how that sausage is made, and
yeah,
sit back and go, wow, that's fascinating. That's really interesting. And that's how it was for me when I started exploring that. And I just happened to be fortunate that a good friend of mine, she used to work LAPD's funeral detail. And we sat down and I just kept feeding her wine and we talked for hours. And I mean, it was just great. I learned so much and it just really came out well in the book. It's a fabulous part of that book.
You know, I got to start reading. Do you have an audio version?
You know, my very first book, A Good Bunch of Men, is out in Audible. And the second book, Door to the Dark Room, is in production as we speak. It should be released December 1st. And the other books, I'm hoping to get one or two, probably two of them into audio next year. So I plan on having all of them in audio because it's a great market. People love it. People demand it. You know, there's so many people that spend so much of their time driving, and there's no reason not to. I mean, I enjoy Audible books. I listen to them all the time.
Yeah, me too. And that's why I'm like, it's a lot easier for me to, like, you know, when I'm on a metro or my drive in or whatever, that I could just listen to a book. And I love it, man. I love audiobooks. Because just finding the time to actually sit down and read is getting tougher and tougher, especially, you know, podcasting and news and everything else.
Well, that's my problem. You know, I still run a business, and then I write, as you can tell, I write a lot I've been going just a couple of years. I got my five books out and I do a blog, and I don't have any time for pleasure reading until I go to bed.
Yes.
And you know, and then I'm so wiped out. It's like I get a couple chapters read and that's it. So if I didn't listen to Audible books when I'm driving, because I do spend a lot of time driving in my business that I have. If I didn't have Audible books, you know, I wouldn't get near as many books, you know, read, so to speak.
Yeah.
I love it. I enjoy it.
Cool. Well, we have come to the end of the interview.
Yeah.
That's one thing about the Protectors, man. It's this 25, 35 minutes goes quick.
Yeah, it flies by and it's fun too. So I appreciate you having me on your show, Jason.
Yeah, I enjoyed our conversation. And now where can we find you? Feel free to plug whatever you want. If there's your business, your books, anything.
Yeah. So the business, I don't really care about. I've had a very successful private investigation company since I retired from law enforcement, but I'm I'm hoping that within the next 2 years I can retire from that right full time, and it's looking like that's gonna happen. So, but as far as my books, it's called the Dickie Floyd Detective Series, Danny R. Smith on Amazon. My website has all the information about my books. It has my blog, and the website is DickieFloydNovels.com, and that's D-I-C-K-I-E, Floyd, F-L-O-Y-D, novels.com. And you can find everything about me on there, and I'm all over Facebook, and I've got an Instagram. I've got a Twitter, but I kind of feel like echo chamber there. I have not been able to figure out a way to make that work for me. So I got a lot of friends there, but I don't think anyone cares.
Okay. Well, hey, I really appreciate it, Danny.
Jason, I appreciate it, man. You have a great evening, and thanks. And I hope your listeners have enjoyed the podcast.